It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Feared. Oh, but if you got the knowledge, it just makes it less scary. You know, it's kind of like watching a horror movie being made. You know, I mean, you're behind the cameras, you see all the set, you know, you got the people in there acting, and ooh, and they don't see the computer generated hobgoblin. They want, you know, so if you know what's going on, you're just not, it's not as scary, you know, But if you don't know what's going on and you just see the film and how they generate the fear out of you, you know, then it can be scary. Well, there's plenty of scary stuff going on, but we're going to try and understand it, take a look from behind the camera at the whole production and see what's going on. And we'll get to my first guest here in a moment, but I want to share something with you right now because I think it's going to tell us what's going to happen this week. Insider selling is outpacing buying, okay, by an enormous amount. I'll give you an example. Now, this is from ZeroHedge.com reporting on a Bloomberg piece. For the week ending September 10th, this last Friday, corporate insiders bought 500,000 in shares in four different companies. This was offset by sales of 332 million in 72 different companies. That's a ratio of 651 sellers to one buyer. 651 to one. See, this is part of the reporting of the SEC, Securities and Exchange Commission. You know, anybody that has, if you go and you open an Ameritrade account or a Charles Schwab or a whatever, okay, you know, E-Trade or something, you go out and you do that, and they're going to ask you questions. You know, the federal government wants to know, do you or your spouse or your kids or some have any interest in blah, 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 and they go through all this stuff, and by law, you're required to say, yes, I'm, you know, CEO or officer in or be paid salary of some company that's registered on, okay, the stock exchange or whatever. Well, you know, that information is public information, so people track that. You know, is that insider trading? I mean, is that, you know, I mean, you got all kinds of limitations, everybody watching and so on, but it happens anyway. 651 to 1 are selling. Selling. Now we got this, you know, it went down, took a dump as 9,800 or something. Now it's what? 10,400. Let's go take a look. Yeah, I don't even need to look. Don't care. Oh man, it's up. 10,500, man. It's taking, it's up there big time. Earlier today it was, you know, 10,559. So this is, they're getting, it's going to take a dump. And this stuff is out there. You know, this is not a secret. FYI. But who tells you this? Now, where do you get this information? CNBC and CNN and Fox and all these, all they want to talk about is, you know, one is, I don't know how bad Obama is doing it, but the economy is getting great anyway, and now everything's at the bottom, and it's not, it's all up from here and all that. Really? Housing prices here in Arizona are going to take a dump again. I know this. It's a bloodbath awaits. Up to 67% of Phoenix homes are underwater. This is reported by ABC 15 here, ABC affiliate here in Arizona, saying that the number of underwater homes in Phoenix may be as high as 67%. This means a complete bloodbath for housing prices is still just beyond the horizon. So what are they doing? Now they have a new government program that they're going out. Oh, it's 3%. You can buy with 3% down, you can get some more housing bubble. They're just trying to get to what? What are they trying to get to? What are they trying to extend to what? One more election cycle. That's what it's always about. One more election cycle. Well, what did we have this weekend? This past weekend, we had 9/11. A lot of the guys will get, as they, filter back in from Flagstaff and around the state and so on later this week, we'll have them come in, and they already put out, did a lot of activism on Freedom's Phoenix, Freedom's with an S, Phoenix.com. You'll see a lot of the signs that they have, big giant signs they made all over Inside Job, doing what for. So what did we have this weekend? I put up a lot of the research on Oklahoma City. The Oklahoma City bombing of the Fred McMurray Building was my generation's 9/11. And we had a little bit closer look on the inside. And in the next hour, we're going to have Kay Beach come on to talk about it. I met her at when we were at Valley Forge in Pennsylvania. And she's working. We had Charles Key, Oklahoma representative. He was instrumental in getting a lot of this stuff out in the late 90s. He knew, they were doing all kinds of stuff in the legislature there. And he's like, oh, no. I'd see where this is going. And they got him out of office. And then he recently won, went back in. They're like, yeah, we need Charles back, man. bring it on. Well, Kay's going to go ahead and talk to us. We got her writing on Freedom's Phoenix. She's starting to put up a lot of the research. There is a film documentary coming out about Oklahoma City. Now, we had a special eye on this because what happened, there was a gentleman named Rick Shiro, and he went on to write for Soldier of Fortune or something like that. He was a BATF fire and explosion investigator, and he left the BATF because he said, man, these guys are rogue. I'm out of here. And then, boom, Waco happened. He became an expert witness for the prosecution, which was the British government, because they had some British subjects that were killed there, and that gave him jurisdiction to open up an investigation. He was on that case. I got drug out. He testified before Congress. He'd come and give presentations to us at the Libertarian Party headquarters that we had here in the mid-90s, and he would tell us all that's what he did. He went to Oklahoma City. He went and looked at the stuff before it was taken down. He helped them with some different stuff. He's the one that found, the serial number on the transaction. Hey, you want to find out where this truck came from? You do this, boom, writer. Okay, I mean, he was part of that as a consultant or whatever. But what happened was, he goes, there was other charges in there. And one time I saw him, while this was all going on, I was at Sam's Club. It's like a Walmart, Costco kind of thing. And I was in there, and I was like, hey, Ernie. And I turned around, this guy in this full, long, Santa Claus beard and a hat. And I'm like, I go, Rick? I said, what the heck, you going native or something? Are you mountain man? And he goes, hey, man, I need to be incognito. After my butt, I don't live in my house anymore. So this is it. FBI came and visited him and wanted to explain it to him. So we've already gone through this. To think that 9/11 was some kind of, revelation of how bad the government was, we already knew. And that was how they got the crime bill passed and a bunch of other, domestic terrorist stuff and everything. And go on and on about, our personal experiences of that and the Viper militia here and all that stuff. So we know. We already know. It's coming out in a documentary. When this comes out and it gets exposed, this entire redo of all the kind of stuff that's been going on in the 9/11 investigation, everything, that this is, this is just after it's been perfected, the wool over the eyes of the American people kind of thing before there was the internet. But a lot of this information is out there. And some of the stuff that we had up were the same thing as on 9/11. You had the newscast live while it's going on. Bomb squads here, multiple detonations, more bombs than one. They're in there retrieving some of the bombs that didn't go off, that brought the pulverized the concrete and brought down demolition, yada, 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 yada. This was all newscast as it was happening. Then you never heard about it again. So all of this stuff, it's not a secret. Then you have a gentleman that they took and interrogated him and beat him because they thought he was, he's John Doe number two. They beat him so bad they killed him. And he had nothing to do with it. He was just some guy. Well, he happened to have an attorney brother, I think from Alaska. that, you know, it's just like the Pat Tillman's mom. He's like, oh, no. We're going to find out exactly what happened and who did what. So here he comes. Finds out a bunch of stuff. Discovery this, discovery that. Then we start finding out more stuff about McVay. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. We've been, you know, I had Channel 12, which is the NBC affiliate, when they executed Timothy McVay, when he was scheduled, was sentenced, and they were going to carry out the sentence that day and lethal injection and so on. They're over at my house. Yeah, what's the crazy libertarian going to say? And the main thing was, I'm like, seriously, do you think that was it? That's the whole story. Is this done? You think it's over? This isn't over. There's a lot more coming. A lot more coming. And we're going to talk about it later today. But when we come back, we have Mike Koninger. He's going to correct me on the Bill of Rights. Was it a good thing? Maybe not. We'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence in just a little bit.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Yeah, the heat is on me. Here on Declare Your Independence of me, Ernest Hancock from Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, from the beautiful studios of Freedoms of the Nest. Phoenix.com. Now, last week or the week before, I had a show on the Articles of Confederation and the beginnings of the Constitution and so on, and we had a nice conversation. And William Buford, he's going to be a speaker at the Freedom Summit. FreedomSummit.com. Go to FreedomSummit.com, and you can see all the great speakers going. We really start promoting it here. We did all the artwork for the banner ads and everything. We'll start really pushing it this week. We'll put it on, like, banner ads on Lou Rockwell and Daily Paul and stuff. We always do that and get it to the Loveolution guys and make sure they know what's what. And then, of course, on Freedom's Phoenix. But the Freedom Summit is, you know, top dollar, man. Instead of this, we get one free, you know, featured speaker, and then you have a bunch of, you know, wish I was kind of guys filling in the thing. No, every single one of our speakers, top of the line, every one of them could be our keynote. And we do this, and it's rocking and rolling good time. And I'll tell you what's different about it. The biggest difference is the fact that of all the people, let's say we have a couple hundred people that come to that. We don't make it really big. We don't do this 1,000 people thing because we try and keep it an intimate thing. And you have a couple hundred people in there, and it's like almost all of them are always in there for every speech. It's that good. And we've been doing this for, God, 10 years. You know, we've been, first one was 2001. And, you know, Dr. Paul has spoken at three of them. So, I mean, you know, it's top-notch guys. You know, Peter Schiff and all these guys, we knew what was coming way before. And you want to know what's going to be happening in this country in the next year, two, decade, you go to the Freedom Summit. Because we predict everything that happened. People made tens of millions of dollars taking advice from some of our financial guys that came in and said, look, let me tell you what's going on. You want to do this, invest here, do it, and go and kind of what they did, boom, made money, thank you very much. How do you think it is we were able to afford all this stuff? Because we have supporters of people that went to the Freedom Summit, made all kinds of money, and said, thank you, Ernie. And I want you to thank me. Go to the Freedom Summit. So, we have one of the gentlemen, his name's William Buford. He writes for Lou Rockwell, and he's become an expert on the Articles of Confederation. And I was interested in that because I'm going, we had the Declaration of Independence, the individual colonies, the states say, you know, hey, we're an independent state now. We combined against the authority of, we're all free and individual states and sovereign and protecting the rights of, and we'll do this Articles of Confederation that'll be kind of this, yeah, okay, we'll, come to each other's defense if. And it had some other stuff. I read the Articles of Confederation a long time ago and kind of breezed through it every now and then. And it's not, you know, the world's greatest document either. But the point was, is that I don't think it was, you know, bad because it was, not organized enough. It was too organized. You still had this collective, you know, we shall everybody get together thing. Well, William Buford makes a very good case for, you know, if the Articles of Confederation certainly may not have been great, but it's a heck of a lot better than what the Constitution wound up doing, which put us all on the plantation. So we had that discussion and so on. And then you start talking about, okay, well, the argument for the Bill of Rights was to take the anti-federalists, the libertarians of the day that were screaming, Patrick Henry, Thomas Paine, Jefferson, all these guys are screaming that this Constitution thing was just a collective. It was a national, might as well call them king. Take the judicial, executive, legislative, lined up against the rights of the individual, free speech zone. That's what happens. They were just Patrick Henry, 4 hours, governor to the legislature, Virginia, saying, do not ratify this thing. So to kind of quell the, you know, the second revolution, they said, all right. A bunch of naysayers, we're going to go ahead and give you this Bill of Rights thing, the chains of the Constitution, you know, all the things we can't do, we'll spell out, can't do it. And anything we forgot, you can put in ninth, tenth, say, and whatever we forgot that you couldn't do, you can't do that either. Okay? So we were talking about, Bill of Rights, you know, made it a little better and so on. And then I get an email from a listener, Mike Croninger. I got you there, Mike?
Yeah.
Mike, what state are you from?
Kentucky.
So in Kentucky, we have Mike listening to the show, and he's going, oh, if it wasn't for the Bill of Rights, you wouldn't even have had a mention of eminent domain. You wouldn't have even had, you know, these powers and these abuses that they're doing. So I'm going, you know, Mike, you need to come on and correct me. So let's go ahead and start it off, Mike. Give me what for.
Well, you pretty much said it all. I mean, the Constitution, the way I read it, you know, all the power the Congress has is in Article 1, Section 8, and there's nothing else they can do outside that section, and the Bill of Rights just gave the federal government more power. So, I mean, okay.
Let's go Article 1, Section 8. Let's go ahead and take a look at it. Now, Article 1, Section 8 says, the Congress shall have power to lay and collect taxes. Well, there you go. There's a problem right there. You can go ahead and stop. You already know they're bad guys. All right, so Congress shall have the power to lay and collect taxes, duties, imposts, and excises, to pay the debts and provide for the common defense and general welfare of the United States. But all duties, imposts, and excises shall be uniform throughout the United States. We can go and just dissect that right there. I mean, I could spend a whole show on that one sentence. But to borrow money on the credit of the United States, well, another problem. Of course, you got the Bank of England. Here we go. Art Hamilton's father-in-law was a merchant in Manhattan, all buds with the Bank of England, and that's how they definitely wanted to have that sentence in there. To regulate commerce with foreign nations among the several states with the Indian tribes. You know, we're given the power of Congress to regulate commerce. And I'm going, Wow. We already had the power to tax, the power to regulate commerce. I mean, if I was king, what else would I want? And then it goes on, you know, money. And I mean, on and on and on. I mean, it's already starting off bad. Now, I always said that, you know, there was the power of eminent domain in here also. And I'm going, you know, if you got all the land under your control, the power to tax and the power to regulate commerce, if I was Lord God King Bufu, what else would I want? Well, you made the comment, you're going, look, eminent domain is not in the Constitution. That didn't come in and give them the power to do that until the Bill of Rights. Is that your point?
That is my point, exactly.
Well, how did you come to that conclusion? When did that happen?
it came maybe a month ago, and I forget why I was looking into it, but I think it started about with the Bill of Rights and how it only applies to the federal government and not the states, which I believe the 14th Amendment under, was it incorporation or indoctor, something about how it allowed the Bill of Rights to extend to the states. And I was doing research on it, and, you know, Ron Paul says, you know, the Bill of Rights only applies to the federal government. And as I was looking through it, I can realize, well, the Bill of Rights, it's not a Bill of Rights for the people, it's a Bill of Rights for the federal government.
I mean, well, this is one thing, the 14th Amendment, all persons born or naturalized in the United States are subject to the jurisdiction thereof, are citizens of the United States, and of the state wherein they reside. No state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of the citizens of the United States, nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor deny to any person within its jurisdiction equal protection of the laws. So that what they did is it, instead of freeing the slaves, it enslaved all of us. It put us under the jurisdiction of a federal government and said, hey man, you gotta treat them all as equal slaves. You gotta make sure everybody gets the due process or we're gonna take your stuff. Okay? So from that standpoint, I can see any judge, the judiciary, the Supreme Court looks at this and they said, oh, yeah, it says we can do this. So you made a very good point. When we come back, we'll talk about this some more because, you know, Mike brought this up and sent me an email. He's going, good guy, Bill of Rights was got that. Heck, that's half the reason we're screwed. And I'm going, I started looking at it, reading it, and I'm going, you know, I can see how it's been used to kick our butt. You know, maybe he's got a very good point that needs to be shared with us all. We'll share it some more when we come back here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and Mike Koninger.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Phoenix, Arizona, hey, from beautiful studios of Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com here on Liberty News Radio. We have Mike Koninger, a caller that made a good point. He sent me an email and he goes, hey man, you know, you sure you know what you're talking about? I've been doing my own research, and I don't think you know what you're talking about. And I'm going, hey, you know, you make the point, you can come on and correct me and tell me I don't know what I'm talking about. So tell me, Mike, how old are you?
27.
So here's a young man, you know, about the same age when I started this back in 88, just looking at the, you know, and had I had access to the same information that Mike does and information that, you know, kind of color my world, you know, I might have picked up on this. And I, you know, I'm always willing to learn something new. And if you look at the second, the first paragraph of the 14th Amendment, and you go back to the original Fifth Amendment, the Bill of Rights, and I think it's the Fifth here, yeah. And, you know, you go to the Fifth Amendment, and you're going, oh, I see what they did. You know, they added this eminent domain thing, you know, even outside of the Constitution. They said, not only do we have the power to tax, not only do we have the power to control commerce, all your land ultimately belongs to us. We forgot to put that part in there. Is that your point?
Yes. And I mean, if you even look at the, you know, Amendment, you know, one, you know, it says that you have the right to peace, you know, peacefully assemble, and then you know that gives the government to declare what is peaceable. I mean, if there's nothing in the Constitution that says that
defines
gives them the power,
peaceably.
There's nothing in there that gives them the power to even regulate speech. So I'm not sure why it's in there.
You know, that was the. Did you read about the arguments against doing the Bill of Rights? And it was the very things that you're talking about. If we do put this in there, they're gonna misconstrue this any way they want. And anything that we didn't put in there, like the right to privacy and all that kind of stuff, they're gonna say, hey, wasn't in the Bill of Rights, life sucks, you don't get it. You know, have you been reading any of that kind of argument?
No, I haven't. I haven't gotten that. I just bought the Articles of Confederation. I haven't really read it yet. No.
This is a very good line of questioning. I'm glad that you came up with this and you called me on it because it sends you. You know, I tell you, nobody's been able to make a valid argument to me that from experience and history and what's happening now can make any kind of argument that no government is somehow less desirable than any government. You know, I'm thinking whenever they do this, and I know that there are a lot of listeners who are going, well, if you didn't, you gotta have a, we need to, I don't know. I haven't seen it yet. You know, it's just, there's so many opportunities when you give power to someone to exercise authority over you, they'll always do it to their benefit or to the institution's benefit. And it's always to the ship of state's benefit. They'll forget about the people and try and save the ship while it's going down with the people. Can we save the people? No. That's what all of this economic stuff that's going on out of the Obama administration with Goldman Sachs. And there's so much stuff that we could go on about. But I wanted to, you know, look through your eyes as a 27-year-old that came across this sacrosanct, more than the Constitution. It's the Bill of Rights. Oh, you know, libertarians all about this Bill of Rights thing. And you're going, hey, man, at 27, I can see that this has got problems. So how does that color your world? I mean, what is it that you are advocating? Do you think government in general, or would you write something different? What would you do?
Well, a lot of people say, you know, well, if you go back to the Constitution and Bill of Rights, and I say, no, let's throw the Bill of Rights out, along with all the amendments, and just go with the Constitution. I know you have a lot of problems with the Constitution, even Articles of Confederation. I'm just not there yet. I'm not really sure what you would promote if you don't like the Constitution, if you don't like the Articles of Confederation. What do you see as the proper role of government, you know, defined, you know,
defense of individual rights. That's why it's declare your independence. You know, they didn't specify what kind of government. They said, you know, let me tell you how you can tell what a bad government. Governments are instituted among men to preserve life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. Okay? So if they're not doing that, well, then, you know, you need to have a rebellion and go kick butt. It's your right, it's your duty to go kick butt, okay? So I'm going, all right. They go, well, what kind did they want? They want a constitution, a republic, a democracy, a democratic constitution, a republic, a monarchy, whatever. They didn't specify, didn't care. You know, that's not our point. Our point is, this is how we can tell when they're bad. When are they bad? When they're not defending your individual rights. So I'm looking at any kind of a government that is that their prime directive? Or do they always use the collective power of we get to take your money and do whatever the heck it is that they want? Because there's so many instances, and later in the third hour of the show today, we'll get into that part about, you know, some of the things they've been doing. And I'm going, how do you stop them from doing these kind of large collective abuse, an entire country, a generation, steal for them, indebt them, exert authority over? How do you stop that? Well, the only way I can think of is don't create the government to begin with. You know, it's, well, how would people organize? I don't know. 15 gazillion different ways in every community and let them. What do I care? At the very least, you can go down to the states or even the local, or heck, can I be king of my castle? If I never left my property, can I be left alone? No. You got to pay property taxes. You know, they got eminent domain from a federal government, no less. So I'm going, you know, this is craziness to be able to say we're a free country where the very first thing that they do is lay claim to all the property I could ever have anyway. How can you be free that way? So if you're going to have a government, I'm just saying it needs to be voluntarist. It needs to be, they would say anarchy. I mean, there is no such thing as anarchy. You always have some kind of organization, you know, be it, you know, culture or be it, tradition or heritage, whatever. I mean, you're always going to have some kind of, man, you done made somebody mad and they come whip your butt and all the community said, good, I'm glad you whipped his butt. Okay, boom, there was your trial. So, I mean, there's always some kind of order. But the thing is that if you create an order that at the very beginning is a violation of life, liberty, property, pursuit of happiness, what'd you think was going to happen? It was going to get better? You know, of course it's not going to get better. It's going to get worse. It's going to continue to get worse because you're going to have the worst sorts that want to put on that shiny badge and enforce whatever it is that they want because you gave the power of somebody to rule over somebody else. Well, the whole concept, the promise of the Constitution to government was that it was going to be instituted to protect the rights of the individual, to prevent all enemies, foreign and domestic, to be able to come in and take your goodies, hurt you, and you know, take your stuff. So was it Michael Badnarik always says, a presidential candidate for libertarians back in 04, he goes, hey, man, all I want is the government says, you know, don't hurt me, don't take my stuff. Well, is that what's going on? No! They're the first ones that get dibs on everything. All your land, all your, you're lucky you get to keep any of your money that you earn. I mean, this, so if you have that kind of mentality from the very beginning, next, next, what's next? I don't know, but next. They go, but if you don't know what next is, then, you know, you can't, you know, throw, the baby out with the bathwater. And I'm going, it's Rosemary's Baby! I mean, are you kidding me? So I'm going, they go, Ernie, you're such an anarchist. You're an anarchist, if it was a bad word. And I'm going, compared to what? Compared to what we got now? I raised my hand really high. Yeah, I'm all for nothing compared to what this organized monopoly of force against everything I hold dear and indebting my grandchildren. I'm what? That, your argument is what? You know, so that is how I look at it. And I'm glad at your age that you were able to seize on these points. But I'm going, you know, if you get back to the Constitution, we look at Article 1, Section 8, the first sentence. The Congress shall have the power to lay and collect taxes. You know, provide for the common defense and general welfare. Well, right off the bat, they want to have a military-industrial complex. That was the whole thing that Hamilton wanted. He even said, he goes, if we don't have the power to collect taxes, how are we ever going to sustain a prolonged war? And I always thought, well, that's a good enough reason not to do it right there. You know, so, and then the general welfare. They always try and use that, the general welfare. Well, the general welfare used to be the promotion of freedom. It was like, can we promote what the Declaration of Independence said? Life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. Is that what's going on? No! All right, when we come back, we're going to give Mike Koninger the opportunity to think about it over the break and tell me what kind of government I want. That federal, state, what, and what are they going to do? What are they going to limit themselves to? We'll find out.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock. And a listener, Mike Koninger, made a very good point last week. He said, Ernie, I don't know, man. It seems to me like the Bill of Rights is kind of what codified this eminent domain thing. And I'm going, and I started looking. I'm going, you know, I bet you there are some Supreme Court justices that said that very thing. So I got to ask you, you know, Mike, if we're going to have a government and you're still advocating the Constitution and such, first off, you know, what are the things that you would think they should never be able to do? I mean, should they be able to tax your real property? Should they be able to regulate your commerce? Should they be able to, you know, have eminent domain over your property? Should they be, I mean, you know, what are the things, or no, only under certain circumstances, if it's for the public good, whatever the heck that is. So I'm wondering if you're going to, you get your government that you want, what are the powers that you don't want them to have and the justification for even creating them to begin with?
I really haven't ever thought about that that much. Is I've always grown up, you know, the Constitution, and I'm starting to see your point. Just right now, governments in every part of everyone's life, everybody's paid into it, you know, right or wrong. And if you just say, oh, you know, no more government, it's going to be real messy, I think. Which, you know.
Compared to what?
Well, yeah, it's messy now, but I'm kind of like blood messy.
No, I mean, it's hundreds of trillions of dollars. I mean, just in man hours. I mean, what's that worth? I mean, how many lives is that? I mean, it's just so, make the arguments now. It's just so, there's no foundation for anybody to even make the argument. Yeah, but if we didn't have a government, we might have what? Everything that you would possibly imagine that would be evil, that would be bad, we have right now because of this government. So I'm just going, we have to come up with something else. I mean, I'm all for, you know, a non-coercive government, you know, a voluntarist society. But can you have that? And it's, you'd have to be able to opt out. Well, you're not allowed. You're born into this slavery. You know, it's like you're going to be part of this under the jurisdiction of no matter what. I have a friend, she's, taking midwifing. And she wants to, you know, do this. And we had friends that, in the mid-90s, they're atheist. But they had their children, to Hope and Honor, okay? They had their children at home in a community called North River up north of Phoenix here. And he's a scientist. I mean, he works for the Department of Defense making computers for F-16, doing whatever. He's an uber, you know, super geek. But he's libertarian, anarchist, atheist. He just, I don't have nothing to do with the government, church, nothing. He had his children at home so that they wouldn't be on the radar screen. But he would take and he filled out their birth in a Bible, a family Bible, because by the law here, that is a birth certificate. Okay. I filled it in here. This kid's here. Did that. Did it. Signed it. Boom. Done. Okay. Mormon influence here in the state of Arizona, along with homeschooling, is very liberal here. You can do whatever you want and peace be upon thee. Well, what happened was when he did that, I go, oh, you recorded in a Bible? He goes, hey, man, you know, it's legal for me to do it that way. No shots, no vaccines, no, you know, it's taken care of. Now I have, it's 15 years later, a friend of mine is doing home birthing, and she goes, by law, they have to be registered. They have to fill out and go through all these, so many, you know, like 60 births and so many visits of that and all this kind of stuff. Then you get your, and then you are author, you are obligated by law. You have to create a birth certificate, even when they have it in the home that gets filed with the government. I mean, when did they add that? And it's because they, you're not allowed to not be in the collective. And then you look, I put it up this weekend. I was watching the U.S. Open, the tennis matches, and IBM has all, they're one of the sponsors, and they have all these commercials. And it has this baby laying, just born, and it has all this binary data all over it. It's just kind of like this aura, this cloud of ones and zeros. Kind of. And the first sentence, that it has all these kind of look like jellyfish, you know, bits of data floating around up, and it says, this is a baby. And I go, I don't know, it looks like freaking clouds of numbers to me. I don't know what you're talking about. And then it kind of pans down, and it shows the baby emitting all this data. And I'm going, oh, if that isn't sick. I go, this is, you know, that's how Nazi Germany had their final solution. IBM computers categorized everybody, had all the data on it. How do you think they knew where the Jews were? Who had the guns? Who didn't? What religion they were? All the, it was IBM data processing. So here we're doing the same bag of it's, we want a wired world. We want a smarter world. No, they don't want a smarter world. They want a smarter them and know everything about you from birth. And they're sitting there showing it to you. And I'm going, this is sick. You know, this is a mentality that we have allowed ourselves to be duped into. You want to know how Nazi Germany came about? Here it is. We are watching it happen. So I'm going, you know, is it mandated? Well, here comes Obamacare and all that kind of stuff from birth to death. This is the mantra that they're putting in our head. And I'm hoping from your generation that as you read this stuff and you come up with the insightful, observation that you're going, I don't know, man, this Bill of Rights kind of, that's where they got this access to all your property whenever they wanted it. Go see the Kelo decision. So I'm going, you know, you're maybe very, very right on that. And I'm going, then you read, Section 8 of Article 1 of the Constitution, they shall have the power. To what? To do a whole bunch of stuff. To borrow money on the credit of the United States. To lay taxes, to pay the money. You know, right there, you know you're screwed. Right there. Right there. Right. I guarantee you, in hindsight, you look back and you go, yep, that's where we got screwed, right there. So I'm going, okay. You know, I'm asking, you know, there's something for you to think about, Mike. Okay, if I'm going to do this, how can I have a society that's not coercive? You know, I got some ideas, but I mean, it doesn't matter. I mean, you know, they're going to twist it anyway. I'll share this one with you. This was a good idea. Think about this, Mike. Okay. There was a candidate, that was running for the nomination in 2000 against Harry Brown and Barry Hassel, and they were going for the Libertarian National nomination for president in 2000. And I can't remember his name. It was Haglin or something like that, Haney or something like that. It started with H, I think. And he had 1-800, whatever the program was, and he really push this program. He ran for president and the nomination just to push this one concept. And it was very interesting. He goes, whenever you sign a contract, you buy a house, you rent a car, you rent a house, you do whatever you're going to be doing. If somebody doesn't abide by that contract, well, you're going to ask the government to enforce it for you. You're going to go to court and you're going to say, hey, this guy did this or didn't do what he's supposed to, and I want this settlement and all that kind of stuff. So you're using the government to enforce your contract. And he goes, why, if that's the only thing, everybody's going, oh, if you didn't have government, you would not have anybody doing anything. He goes, fine, if you want to have the court system, fine. But how do you voluntarily, non-coercively pay for that? He goes, based on the value of the contract, if you have a $100,000 house, if you have a $10,000 car, if you have a $1,000 rental, if you have whatever, it's a percentage based on the value of the contract that you want enforced. And you have one of two options. You can go, we can do private arbitration, or the court's not going to be involved and we'll sign here at our own risk. Or you'll go, I'm going to pay the fee. I'm going to pay the, you know, $300 or whatever to be able to enforce my $100,000 contract. That's my insurance. I have the contract enforced by the government, and you voluntarily pay that fee to have the government enforce the contract. And I go, that is a good idea. It's not coercive. It uses the power of the government, and you paid for it based on the value of whatever contract that you signed. And I'm going, if you start from that premise, that government not be coercive, you come up with all kinds of created ideas and ways of funding it. But if you already come with the idea, yeah, but you got to have a government and they have to extract money from you without your consent to do this noble cause thing, you already lost a battle before it even started, and you never even come up with creative and non-coercive voluntarist ways of doing the same thing. You see my point?
Yes, I do. And, maybe for the first time, I see your side of things. I've been always relied on the Constitution, but now I kind of understand how if you can voluntarily get into things, start things, it could definitely work.
Well, if you give it a chance, I mean, that has to be your goal right to begin with. But the Constitution, the goal was not freedom. The goal was control. The goal was and the argument a lot of people make is that, but what about the poor and the elderly and the young and the, I mean, it goes on and on and on, thinking that some law is going to protect them. I can give you 15 gazillion, ways of, how it's not protected them, because that's not their priority. They let bad things happen to the most defenseless. And it's because it's not their priority. They don't care. So I'm going, in a free society, they care. And when you out government stopping you, Grandpa gets involved. Grandpa's involved. Hey, Mike Koninger, thank you very much for bringing this up. I really learned a lot from you just asking that very poignant question about the Bill of Rights and how eminent domain got into our Constitution. And I think that one thing right there, you changed my entire life with that one email, you the man.
Well, you're welcome.
Now, we'll go ahead and do some more research and see. And your first priority is, how can you create a government that doesn't violate individual rights? That's the goal right there. You come up with something, you let me know, and we'll talk about it here and declare your independence. Me, Ernest Hancock, Kay Beach. Stay tuned. Oklahoma City, all stuff you didn't know. That was the 9/11 of my generation. We already knew what they're capable of. We'll be right back.